Hello, hello, and welcome to the first episode of Orbiting the Ghost Planet, your episode-by-episode discussion of Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Joe.
And today, we begin our journey with Season 1, Episode 1, Spanish Translation. So, Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I really like this show.
Okay, no. All right, I guess with anything, it's best to start at the very beginning.
That is the normal way of beginning, yes.
So, Nick, tell me, what is Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Kind of strange. Tastes a little like chicken. But no, Space Ghost, I won't say that it has a long and sordid history, but I will say anyone out there who is a fan of any of the Adult Swim programming, so we're talking Robot Chicken, Aqua Teen, and actually for that matter, once you dig deeper, you realize even the non-adult-oriented programming, so if you were ever a fan of Dexter's Lab or the Powerpuff Girls or Johnny Bravo or anything in that sort of cartoon realm, really you need to be giving some thanks to Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Let me take you back. All right, you ready? You ready for this trip?
I'm ready for this trip.
Okay, we will get into the episode itself after I give you a little context. Because not only is this the first episode of the season, their first episode of the year, this is the first episode. And here's the real trick about it. It's kind of the first episode. So our story begins, really, back in 1991. I believe at that time we were about 2 years old.
Yep.
Does that sound right?
Sounds about right.
You remember anything back then?
Nope.
So let me tell you about what happened back then. Ted Turner bought Hanna-Barbera. Basically, that's about where this story starts. You could go back a little further to when Ted Turner, not necessarily his company, but Ted Turner, he is a large persona. Ted Turner had done some sort of deal, and I think the story goes he purchased MGM for about 79 days before financials told him to give it back. but that left him with a whole bunch of old cartoons. So there was like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, Merry Melodies.
Right.
Some of this might be starting to sound familiar from childhood.
I am familiar with those.
If you watch cartoons when you were young.
I didn't. Not? I caught up later.
Okay. Once he had all these older, there was like a lot of, there was some weird split, like it was only the color stuff and not the black and white stuff, but then he got the rights to that later. He just wound up with a sum of cartoons. Wasn't too many, but it was a healthy library. So that was sometime in the late 80s. We get to 1991, and he buys Hanna-Barbera Productions, the studios. So if you're not familiar with Hanna-Barbera, here's a quick run down on them. Flintstones, Jetsons, and Yogi Bear.
I don't think I've ever actually seen an episode of any of those shows.
How about Scooby-Doo?
I have seen Scooby-Doo.
Okay, Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo is Hanna-Barbera. Hanna-Barbera is sort of a topic on its own, and I feel like we'll touch on them again and again.
Probably.
But yeah, really, go back. Speed Buggy, Jabberjaw, Wacky Races.
See, those just sound like word salad to me. I have no idea what any of those are.
I mean, to be fair, they kind of were. The Chan Clan. See, like none of this is hitting home, right? Okay.
No.
And then also sort of tucked away in the corner next to the Herculoids, there was also Space Ghost. All right. So
okay.
Just keep that in your mind for a little bit. So in 91, he gets Hanna-Barbera, he gets access to the library, and he says, like, man, you guys made so many cartoons. I can do something with this. And so in 1992, Cartoon Network starts. Up until that point, a lot of networks had sort of a cartoon block. USA had a block. I think TBS had a block. A number of these I watched. That's one of these blocks is where I started watching Sailor Moon at, like, 8 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and then you wait until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and there was Mega Man and Samurai Pizza Cats. it already existed that there were cartoon blocks on normal networks, but you know, cartoons are just like, oh, cartoons are for kids. Kids
sure.
Don't buy TVs, they don't buy cable service, whatever. Up until Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon has started a few years prior, and they were sort of a one of the first kids, you know, youth-oriented channels. Not dedicated to cartoons, though. They also had a number of live-action shows. They had whatever they had going on. I remember watching Nickelodeon. I think there was Eureka's Castle and Salute Your Shorts. Does that sound right?
I have no idea.
Guts and Global Guts. Nick Jr. Blue's Clues was eventually a Nickelodeon, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's another universe. We'll get to that. But yeah, so Ted Turner said, all right, we can do, you know, Nickelodeon's out, so we know something's happening where people are saying we can do a whole cable channel for with youth-oriented programming. Let's just do it with cartoons. I got all these cartoons. I'm rich with cartoons. And they just said, all right, throw them up. Cartoon Network. And that's where it started. So that's why when Cartoon Network started, it was a lot of Scooby-Doo and Flintstones and Jetsons and the Smurfs and the Snorks.
What are Snorks?
They're Smurfs, but underwater, and they got straws coming out of their head.
I will take your word for that.
Man, we are going to go on an adventure one of these days going down that hole. So Cartoon Network is created using this big catalog of Hanna-Barbera and Bugs Bunny cartoons. And they're good with this for about 2 years.
And what happened after 2 years?
After 2 years, we had Space Ghost, Coast to Coast. It wasn't the first thing. Things had been produced before then, but so far it had all been sort of interstitials and wrappers around these pre-existing cartoons. So Toonheads was this sort of weird puppet thing. There was like a afternoon cowboy thing where they had they basically did almost like a Howdy Doody thing. They had cowboy puppets who would come in, sing, dance, tell a joke, introduce a cartoon, and then a Bugs Bunny cartoon would play or something else would play. So they had been making these interstitials, but that's kind of all they were making. But they were doing like production on it. Like these were things that needed writing. These were things that had characters and ADR and were actually being produced and had a lot of effort going on into. That's something that, I always appreciated in that era of Cartoon Network is they did a lot with their bumpers. They made, you know, it almost feel like the, you know, Cartoon Network metaverse was its own universe that had stories going on. And, sort of the familiar one, I think, was like, the Fred Flintstone and Yogi Bear carpooling into work and looking for a space and Space Ghost stealing their spot. That was a commercial that, I don't know, I remember very vividly and fondly. And sort of right before Space Ghost, they did this other thing that was sort of very produced and sort of ambitious for the time. It was the Moxie Pirate Radio Show. Moxie was a cartoon dog voiced by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Okay.
He had a sidekick who named Flea, who was a flea and was voiced by Penn Jillette.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was weird. And it was fully 3D. If you look into it, it had a little bit of like live action puppetry going on. Like there was motion capture data to animate the character. And, you know, it was being its own show. They did intros and outros and jokes and right. And it was basically a whole show, except yet again, it was all short form, and they wrapped it around other shows. So Moxie would come in and say, hey, it's the Moxie Pirate Show. I'm a dog. Harf, harf, harf. Because that's how Bobcat Goldthwait kind of sounds. And that is as far as they had gotten.
It's a start.
Yeah. Until one day, one fateful night, young Andy Merrill, remember that name, he's going to come up pretty much over this entire series. And rightfully so when you figure out who he is. Andy Merrill came in with the tape. He had been bored over a long weekend or something. He had taken an interview with Denzel Washington from like some sort of Oscar show that had just gone on TV.
Okay.
He taped that off air. He taped some Space Ghost episodes. And using his VCR at home, he cut together scenes of Space Ghost and scenes of Denzel. And then he recorded his own voice over the Space Ghost sections to make it an interview with Denzel. So Space Ghost was interviewing Denzel. You may have seen Weird Al doing a couple of these at
yes,
some point.
Yes, I have seen Weird Al do that.
Much more recently, I believe.
Yeah.
But, so this was something that had been done before, but Andy Merrill was already employed by the Cartoon Network doing interstitials, I guess, because that's mostly what they did. Interstitials and figuring out which episode of the Flintstones to play. And he just came in with this tape and said, hey, I made this. What do you think? And everybody went crazy over it. That VHS tape, that VHS rough cut has, as I see it, has sort of become sort of a legendary artifact of Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, the Space Ghost era, all of that. And somebody was just crazy and just said, sure, we got everything we need to do this. It's using the Space Ghost episodes the Space Ghost sort of pieces.
Yeah.
And that's Hanna-Barbera. We already got that sitting around. We got things for doing, you know, live action production. We got things for doing animation. We got editors sitting around. We got people doing voiceovers. We got all of this stuff already. Sure. Let's give this a shot. And that's where Space Ghost came out of. Like, it was basically somebody just said, we got everything around anyway. You know, take the last hour you're at work and work on this thing and we'll see if anything comes of it. Like, again, sort of the story as it goes is that nobody thought this was going everywhere. Everyone thought it was like, this is just some stupid idea. Let's give it a shot. Maybe we'll have some fun. As long as the check clears, hey, okay. And 110 episodes later, we're talking about it. So, clearly something clicked. But yeah, Space Ghost Coast to Coast. A animated talk show with real lifelike celebrities that aired at 11 o'clock on Friday nights on Cartoon Network for many, many years. But so now that we have an idea of where this came from, what the genesis of the show was, we sat down and to begin watching. So as all of you faithful, of course, at home know, if you have the Space Ghost Coast to Coast DVD set, Volume 1, the first episode is actually Elevator. Strange thing, for some reason, on the DVDs, episodes are in their own unique, fanciful order. We are actually going by the air order, or at least the order that the episodes are listed on Wikipedia. But yes, we are starting with Season 1, Episode 1, Spanish translation. And we hit play, and what did you think?
It was interesting.
What's so interesting about it?
Well, for one thing, I don't know anything about any of the characters or anything, really.
Well, so...
I mean, the Bee Gees were on it. I know who the Bee Gees are.
That's funny. I don't know who the Bee Gees are. I assume they're a band.
They are.
Are they British?
I actually enjoy the Bee Gees. I don't know anything about them personally. I know their music.
Okay, sure.
That's what I get for being raised on the oldie station.
So, in a weird way, you come from the, if you did come from the old show, the only thing there is to know about the characters comes from the old show, which just, Space Ghost is a superhero, he can turn invisible, he can fly, he can shoot lasers out of his arms,
mm-hmm.
which, all of those were exemplified in the first episode, so, okay. they're teaching you everything there.
Mm-hmm.
Montar is sort of a lava kind of a molten man.
And that's why he's in the suit, to keep him shaped.
Your guess is really as good as mine. There might be a person in there. There might be magma in there. We don't know. He's Moltar.
Mm-hmm. I like Zorak. I know that much.
Yes. And so Zorak was, Zorak, like Moltar, was another evil villain who just went there. And sort of the only thing that isn't explicitly said, but also doesn't come from the old thing, is just a sort of assumption that, like, Moltar and Zorak are now captured villains that Space Ghost has forced into working on the show. I suppose that part is never explicitly stated, but aside from knowing that Space Ghost is a hero and Moltar and Zorak are the villains...
Yeah, I mean, really, why else would they be working there?
Yeah, but really, that's it. So, like, anything you see here, this is the introduction. If there's something you don't know, nobody knew, so don't feel like you're missing
okay. out. So, like, the animation and stuff used in... this show, is that all repurposed stuff, or did they do their own animating for the show?
Right now, in this season, it's still repurposed stuff. So, of course, the sets and the backgrounds are new.
Right.
Moltar's little prison pod is new.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the desk and chair are actually a 3D set. That is a little model. That is like dollhouse furniture, or at least approximately that size. So that's actually like a live-action camera shot, which is...
That's pretty neat.
It's neat. It's weird that they would even choose to do it that way, but sure. Actually, strangely enough, I learned eventually that that is the same way that Moxie's show was done, is that they built a physical, cartoonish-looking set and filmed that and then just superimposed the animation onto it, which, sure, why not?
Yeah.
I've been known to do that in the past. Okay, so I don't know how much stuck out to you. I don't know how much this was just a... Oh, what is the line? Lots of wind and noise signifying nothing. What am I thinking of?
I don't know. I know, but I don't remember what. So for the interview process.
Yeah, if you want to call it that.
Like, they actually sat down and interviewed people for this. They're not using interviews from other places.
These are all original interviews.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And over time and circumstance, like, the exact nature of those interviews changed, but
I would imagine so, just because I can't imagine how you would explain this show to someone to get them to come be on it.
Well, so my understanding is if you say it's a talk show, then people say, okay, I got something to promote, I'm trying to do something, I can get on a talk show. Also, consider that, you know, the first guests on here were Susan Powder, which I have no idea who she is.
Me neither. I like her, though.
On this first episode, we got Susan Powder, we got Kevin Meaney, who was not that guy from Mouse Hunt.
That's Nathan Lane.
That was Nathan Lane. So we got Kevin Meaney, who, to me, his defining characteristic is he is not Nathan Lane. And we got the Bee Gees, who are there kind of just to be made fun of.
Yeah. I imagine that happens a lot on this show.
Yeah. Well, so, and you know, that is one of the ways that, you know, the show subverts the sort of talk show concept, and right out of the gate, like first episode, every single interview, there was some aspect of space, like just like the guests are not respected.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Kevin Meaney was sort of doing one of his gags and Space Ghost kept cutting him off.
Mm-hmm.
Did Susan Powder get blasted?
No.
The destructive beam? Okay, so she ended on a sort of civil note, but the Bee Gees, they got about two words in, they got giggled like a bunch of idiots, and then they got exploded off of the screen right before the episode.
And the thing is, like, I imagine that there's like a full interview where they actually asked them questions and had discussions and stuff, and that's the bit they chose to use.
Yeah.
Also, how for interview questions, like, do they actually ask them the questions that they're going to use in the episodes, or do they like have normal questions and then like throw in weird, funny stuff after the fact?
Half and half. I think in this season they were playing a bit more straight in it, so there's a good chance that they sort of had like a list of questions. Like, here's kind of questions Space Ghost might ask them, and then pretty much use them for the show. As we get later on, you'll definitely start to notice just like, well, that's, you know, not only is that a weird question to ask, but that's also a weird answer to get from it. And it's just like, what did he? So I will say, if you are really curious, and maybe we can work this in later on, but on the DVD collections, they do have a couple of raw interview footage.
Man.
They have it with, oh, I think I can name them all. Steve Cross and Bob Odenkirk. They were a duo interview.
Mm-hmm.
Conan O'Brien. Busta Rhymes? I think that's one of the raw interviews. That's a real... You're not ready for that yet. I don't mean to be mean, but you are not sufficiently prepared yet.
I was just thinking about that, though, because, like, when I play video games, especially because I've been playing a lot of Dragon Age lately, and I've been interested in, like, you know, writing video game-type stories like that, but... when you're doing dialogue trees and stuff, you can kind of see how, like, the responses, like, fit, like, all of the options and, like, where it would split and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
you can definitely see, like, okay, this is the line that they say no matter what I just said to them.
Right,
yeah.
So in the show, I was, like, I could kind of notice the disparity between their responses and his question and be like, okay, that sounds like they wrote the question after they got that line.
Sometimes they just ask weird questions and they get a, well, cause don't forget, it's sometimes it can seem a bit weirder because it's not just that the question doesn't match the answer, but you know, there was a totally different person interviewing the celebrity and then somebody else had to come in and George Lowe, the voice of Space Ghost, he had to come in and record the questions.
Do they actually
after
use the guy who does the actual voice, did the actual voice in the original show?
No.
That would be funny.
Was the original Space Ghost voice was Gary Owens. And here in the first episode, the first season, they try to go for sort of like be kind of Gary Owens-ish. They ease up on that eventually, which, by the way, there was one line right there at the end. He says something, the Bee Gees, boy, I wish we could really just fry them.
Yeah.
Like, a couple of things about that. Like, one, that did not have sort of the superhero projecting intonation. Two, there was no lip flap on it. They did not animate them out.
I was going to say, it seemed like a inner monologue voice.
Well, so the story goes, and what that most likely is just, you know, talking in front of the mics like we are now during the recording session.
Mm-hmm.
just George Lowe might have just seen like, oh man, we got the Bee Gees on the show. I can't believe we got the Bee Gees. Okay, what's the line? And then it got thrown in. Uh-huh. You will see evidence of that happening over and over. And to their credit, I think they do a pretty fantastic job of picking lines and putting them in so that they seem kind of natural. And also, like, that was almost like one of the most natural sounding lines in the show. Which, you know, to go with the awkwardness of the questions, the sort of stiltedness of everything else, did it stand out to you as it did to me, the sort of deliberateness of every line and action in this episode?
Yeah, it seemed like they were very much sculpting everything.
Yeah, but like...
even the nonsense bits.
Well, at the very start, he says, you know, greeting citizens, and then waves. And the show is absolutely silent while the wave animation plays, and then it cuts and he says his next line.
Mm-hmm.
Later on in the episode, they all sort of laugh about something. They all get Moltar laughs, cut to Zorak, Zorak laughs, cut to Space Ghost laughs, and they all have about a same time on screen.
That was actually something I was going to comment on. I like the timing on the delivery and stuff for how they do stuff.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, that's where I don't know. Did they have that complete... there's a sort of... the show is already awkward, and they injected more awkwardness into it.
Yes.
Like, going to the desk, there's that moment where he, like, stubs his toe or something, and he just goes, ah! And then the music continues playing, and he goes to the desk.
Uh-huh.
There's... oh, man, we got to talk about this. The MST3K reference?
Yes.
For number two is going to be that there was one of those. But number one, just, like, in there... it's clear the reference that they're making, but they don't go for it. And there's quiet, there's the coughing, and there's sort of like the sort of the feet are like, actually, this is pretty good. This is worth watching. So, but you know, again, this is at this the final show that comes out, and the gags are scripted. So somebody wrote, actually, this is pretty good. Wrote in there should be a cough there, or at least edited. There's a very natural flow in the way that these sort of come to the finished project. A lot of stuff that sort of gets in just because one person was able to put it in at their part, never really asked or considered, just, let's just put it in. But yeah, so like, not only is there a strange disconnectedness of the whole show, but then they added more of it. They made sure it was right there. And in this beginning season, it is kind of suffocating is what it is. By the end of the season, it does lighten up a bit, but right now, man.
Well, I mean, I expect it to kind of grow and change as they get more of a handle on what they're going for.
Again, you don't even know, like, the last season kind of stuff. Like, I know what the end boss of this show is like, and man, I know what a lot of the mini-bosses are like. This show was bosses? That's weird. Clearly nobody was in charge. What else? Okay, yes. Like, within the first 15 seconds of the show, how many references did you spot?
Well, there were things also that I assume were references that I just don't know what they're referring to.
Tell me what you got and tell me what you thought they were, and I'll tell you. Cause,
well, no, because the only ones I got was like the MST and the Beavis and Butthead, which I only know through other references to Beavis and Butthead because I've never actually seen Beavis and Butthead.
Really?
Yes.
You're not missing much.
I know.
We have some DVDs.
I can tell from the references and stuff that it's not something I would enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was, you got that, the MST, you got the Beavis and Butthead. I got a couple of other here that I got down. Right there at the beginning, while the set begins to burn down, that happened. There was a Lost in Space reference.
Yes.
Danger, Will Robinson.
I got that one.
And there was a Simpsons reference.
Which you would get.
Yeah. Wait, did I get it wrong?
What?
It might have been a Ren and Stimpy and a Simpsons reference, actually. Okay, remind me. Did you hear Zorak scream, Space Ghost, you idiot?
Yes.
Okay, I wrote that as a Simpsons reference. That's actually a Ren and Stimpy reference, to which Space Ghost replies, Doe, which then is a Simpsons reference.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you already got all of that going on, and it kind of just goes into this. There's just this recurring, like, you can almost sense it's like they weren't quite sure what to do.
Yeah.
You had the structure. It's cartoons, it's Space Ghost and the villain, so they're going to have a dynamic. But then also, they're going to try to hold an interview.
Right.
While all of this is going on. But they filled it with references.
I was going to say, then they also had, like, the infomercial thing that they included. And then, as per the title, they had the Spanish translations, which caught me off guard every time, and therefore were hilarious, because, like, I had forgotten that they were doing that, and then they would do it, and I would just crack up because they actually did it.
They do it for no reason. That is the only thing I cannot explain in this episode. That is the only thing. Why Spanish? See, one thing that could come from is a lot of the Turner networks, I think they have like a big studio that a bunch of networks work out of. That's the way a lot of broadcasting, I think, works. I'm not really a broadcasting industry guy, but I've been to a radio station or two. But there's a chance that the reason the Spanish translation is in there, I think there was something like Telemundo was down the hall from them. So that could just be an in-joke.
Entirely possible.
But so, you know, now we're looking at this again. Like, we have this one sort of, like, kind of solid, workable idea, which is cartoon interview talk show.
Right.
We have all of these references kind of to fill time and be like, hey, we're topical. We know what the kids like. It's Lost in Space. What? we have this, you know, the kids like Beavis, used to. And then you also just got this, like, well, we think this is funny, and who cares if nobody else gets it?
I mean, the thought of Zorak and Moltar singing children's rhymes that have been a little changed to their tastes is amusing.
In a weird way, I think that is almost like a sign of more talent about what was going on in this episode. Because the way that it breaks out actually sort of and became a whole separate thing, this, you know, a fake commercial. It went from being a talk show with sort of like a throwaway reference to being a fake commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So that's almost like Saturday Night Live would do a skit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I could see like doing Mr. Show doing a skit like that, something like that, where it kind of just naturally went into it because you have the show.
Mm-hmm.
You have the segment of Brack and Cisco watching the show, mm-hmm. even though it's the Beavis and Butthead voices, which non-canonical. I'm the only one who would say canonical about Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, but whatever. And then they just, you know, they're static and they go to the full commercial. And then also they come back later and Space Ghost is watching that commercial on his monitor on the set. So it becomes this weird thing. It's like, no, it is like a fake commercial is something that can stand on its own. And it's pretty decent because, you know, it's also weird. It's using the characters. It's subverting the things. But like also it's just like they did this weird thing. It's like, no, that's kind of in universe and we're going to self-comment on it and we're going to try and, you know, find a way to work it in naturally, even though it makes no sense, but it continues to flow. It's like, why would his guest monitor be there and be showing TV? Like, okay, yeah, I guess it's just a monitor, but it has who knows? That's the one thing about Space Ghost is who knows? Nobody needed to know and they never thought knowing was important.
Mm-hmm. I also like how his question to the interviewees is, do you have enough oxygen?
Well, they are in space.
So I know. It's great.
But yeah, like, I don't know. I almost feel because you see something like that and like, okay, that's a decent joke. That's a decent sketch almost. Like that could be like a separate sketch.
Yeah.
Which also works a hell of a lot better than any of the referencing. Like the MST one is kind of all right. But again, they made like sort of a jokey trailer in there that they were commenting on. And doing the, like, awkward cuttingness of that, and that was fine, too. And, like, that part almost worked better than the part where it was a reference.
Yeah.
And also, they just have good things. Very last line, talking about a poo-poo platter.
Yeah, I love how they ended on that.
Just good, like, line reading. Just really silly line readings, because this is a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And they got that, like, I don't know. And then you sort of wrap it all up, and you look at, like, the style of the intro, like, all the video noise and quick cuts and inverted colors.
Yeah.
And just that guitar noise.
Yeah, it's like...
It continues...
Kind of like, this is what the show is going to be.
It really does. It is very thematic in the sense of just like, we're going to jump around. We're going to do a bunch of different things. A lot of strange things are going to be butted together. And just like, why would you put those in with each other? The interview and the reference and the jokes and this skit and this other thing and this other thing and the Bee Gees and this like line that we recorded by accident and wasn't on script. And just like, it's noise. The show is sort of structural narrative noise. But at the same time, non sequiturs can be done well.
Mm-hmm.
And man, we are going to have a lot more examples of how they are done well. So let's finish this discussion for today.
Okay.
We have plenty more to get through, so we're not going to... We need to save something for coming up, because I'm really not sure what we're in for. I hope we can have enough to talk about every episode. You're going to have to join us again next week as we find out. So we hope you will join us again when we watch another episode and complete another orbit around the ghost planet. You have been listening to Orbiting the Ghost Planet, an Elite Coup Studios podcast network production. You can visit the show page at eliteqstudios.net/podcast/ghostplanet. There you can find the rest of our episodes, the RSS feed for the show, and links to our Facebook page where you can talk about this and all the other Elite Coup Studios shows. You can also subscribe to us in iTunes, and while you're there, you can help us by leaving a quick review and rating. Please visit eliteqstudios.net to learn more about us and what we do. That's OLEETKU.